You guys, today I am republishing one of my very favorite podcast episodes ever. It is my most downloaded episode in the 2 years I have been podcasting, and it is also my episode that has the absolute worst audio quality ever. So it's the very first interview I ever did remotely, and I literally was talking to my friend Steve Cook on my cell phone, and I had it on speakerphone, and I was recording our conversation. That makes me laugh so hard with all of the improvements I've made in the way that I record episodes, but that is all I knew at the time. So I have gone through and edited this episode and tried to make it as clear as possible, but the content in it is so good, I just had to reshare it with you. Steve Cook is a well-known public figure in the fitness industry. He owns a gym and an app called Fitness Culture. He is also a Gymshark athlete and a well-known member of the fitness community. In this episode, he actually talks about going to a casting call to be a coach on The Biggest Loser. And you guys, 2 days ago was the series premiere of The Biggest Loser with Steve Cook as one of the weight loss coaches. Even though I can't take any credit for that, I am so proud of Steve for following his passions and being so successful and such a spokesman for physical fitness and health. I cannot wait to watch this season of The Biggest Loser and see him do his thing. And I'm so excited to share my interview with Steve Cook with you today. On the Brighter Side. This is episode number 7, and I have a super special guest for you all today. This guest is a huge fitness personality on YouTube. He is a Gymshark athlete. He owns his own gym called Fitness Culture in St. George, and you can also get his app by the same name, Fitness Culture. I met this guy when he was a junior in high school, and he was like a younger brother to me. And then after he graduated from high school, he went on to play football in college. And then we lost contact for several years until we just met up last year at an event in Boise. And he was anything but little. He is now a big, handsome, successful guy. And I just couldn't be more proud and so excited to welcome Steve Cook to the podcast today. Hello, Steve. How are you?
Hello. After that intro, I'm doing very well. Thank you so much. You're way too kind.
Well, I'm just so glad that you're able to give us some time today, and I'm so excited to ask you some questions.
I'm excited as well. It's nice. It's always nice to get on call with and just talk with old friends. So that's what I'm kind of viewing this as.
Oh, that's awesome. So tell me, Steve, when did you know you wanted to go into bodybuilding?
I knew I wanted to go into bodybuilding. It was something that I was just kind of curious from a young age. I grew up in a house of 7 kids, and my dad was an athletic director. So, you know, we were always involved in sport. And, you know, we'd go to the track, we'd go to the gym. And really, it was because, you know, it was kind of a way to get all of our rambunctiousness out. It was a way for us to be able to, you could put us to sleep, and we'd fall asleep at night. We wouldn't stay up and bug them. So we would go and train and do, you know, I remember going to the track when I was a little kid. And as I got older and did more sports, and, you know, I was just naturally attracted to weights and exercise, but particularly, I would say, you know, weightlifting and then into bodybuilding. I can remember in high school and college doing the workouts that I needed to do for sports and then continuing on and doing more of the beach muscles. You know, I can remember, you know, always being, you know, interested in the bodybuilding thing. I think it was because in sixth grade, you know, my dad had me doing push-ups and sit-ups when I was real young, you know, third, fourth, fifth grade. And I remember in sixth grade, a girl asked if she could touch my pecs. And it was like this, like, light bulb. Like, I was no longer just doing things because I liked it. I was like, oh, people notice this stuff. So it's kind of a weird story. And I didn't, like, at the time, I was like, oh, man. I went home, and I think I told my parents. And they I think they were a little bit concerned, but then they just realized it was harmless.
Oh, that's awesome. So now I know you as authentic and sincere, and you have such a kind heart. And I want to know how you stay so humble and down to earth in such a competitive and kind of superficial industry.
Yeah. That, you know, this industry, I remember at certain points getting caught up in the superficialness, and even still to this day, it's something that I have to be careful because I have that personality type where I want to be the best and have the nicest things. So I need to be kept checked, you know, and there's a number of ways I do that. And I think first and foremost, it's having the friends and family that I do, you know, being one of seven kids, all my brothers and sisters are all very down to earth. My parents were, you know, they're both school teachers in the education system. So, I didn't grow up with parents that were movie stars or anything like that. So my parents, being from Idaho, grew up on 5 acres, and we didn't have a whole lot of nice things. I didn't get on a plane in my life until I was a junior in high school. So I think I have people around me that always kind of keep me grounded. And then I also have people in my life that, like my dad, he'll remind me, you know, like, this is, everything you're doing is great, but, you know, it's not the end-all, be-all.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's great to have those people that keep you grounded. So what is your biggest motivation to get to the gym every day?
I get asked this question a whole lot, and I think, motivation is something, you know, I used to think I needed to motivate myself all the time. And as I've gotten older, I realized motivation, it comes and goes. Like, I tell people this all the time. Motivation is something that will work for a short period of time. You have extrinsic and intrinsic motivation. The extrinsic motivation is like, you know, my dad says, hey, you can get the driver's license if you get a 3.5 GPA. Well, in high school, that was my motivation to get good grades so I could drive. That was extrinsic motivation. Extrinsic motivation, which is, in my opinion, more important and lasts longer, is that internal drive to do things. Now, both are good, but I think both come and go. Like, we're never always motivated as we should be, especially when it comes to fitness and eating healthy. It's just the first thing that typically goes when we're stressed is our eating habits. We start eating too much or we don't eat enough. So I think what's more important than motivation is creating habits, because habits don't take self-control. Motivating yourself to go to the gym takes a lot of self-discipline and self-control. To not eat that cookie and reach for that salad, that takes self-control and self-discipline. So the way you get that, or the way you strengthen that, is just like you would strengthen any other muscle, because we are bombarded throughout our day with decisions that we need to make, and as we make those decisions, our self-discipline muscle is getting weaker. It's our ability to keep on making those right decisions or those hard decisions. It weakens, and, like, you know, you see so many people at the end of the day, that's when they're reaching for the junk food, because they don't have any more self-control or self-discipline. But we can strengthen. Studies have shown that we can actually strengthen that self-discipline muscle, and it's by creating good habits. So, for example, you and I probably don't think about brushing our teeth ever. It's something that we grew up doing. We just do it. Because when we were young, we got in the habit of, you know, hopefully at least every morning and every night, brushing your teeth. Now, habits, they don't take self-control or self-discipline. You do them over and over and over again, and it's just, you go through those motions. You don't have to think about it. So getting in good habits of eating right or going to the gym every day is just in the habit, and it's creating non-negotiables, things that you just have to do. No matter what else happens, you know that you're creating a habit and it's a non-negotiable. So you don't have to convince yourself to go to the gym. You know when you wake up every day, you're going to get up, you know, brush your teeth, drink some water, drink a smoothie, and boom, you're at the gym. Or on your way home from work, you're not going to go home. You're going to go straight to the gym. You know, drink that protein shake that you packed early on in the day. And that creates, and that's tough. That takes organization, and it takes doing something over and over and over again so you know how long you have to think about it. You just do it. So I think that is more important than, you know, everyday motivation. That being said, you know, I still try to motivate myself, get excited about things, because you might go through the motions, but you might not be excited about things. So I still try to motivate myself to get pumped up for things, and that's typically through, you know, reading something or watching something on YouTube, something that's more inspirational.
Yeah. So there has to be those mornings you just wake up and you're like, oh, I just don't want to go to the gym today. So what thoughts or ideas get you up and kind of moving?
I think what it is, sometimes I end up tricking myself. Sometimes it's about just, you know, telling yourself, okay, I'm going to get up and I'm going to commit to going to the gym. And I might only do 10 minutes, you know, on the treadmill. I might only do, you know, stretching. But I'm just going to go because I want to get in that habit, create those habits of at least going to the gym. And I might not be extremely motivated today, but I still need to go. So I'll tell myself that, you know, you don't have to kill yourself this workout. You know, you might be feeling a little bit under the weather. And what ends up happening is by the time you get to the gym and you've already committed yourself to that, you're now feeling better. You're now like, it's a little pat on the back. At least I'm here. Well, maybe I'll walk for 15 minutes and then, you know, maybe I'll do some lightweight. And a lot of the times, the best workouts I have are ones that I don't set any expectations. I go in and I'm gonna feel it out and do what I can, and I end up having just some amazing workouts and feel so much better throughout the entire day because I stuck to my commitment. It's amazing what happens when, you know, you feel, I guess, integrity. You feel like you kept that promise to yourself. And I think that those are little baby steps that ultimately add up to the big things. It's about doing the small things better than you've ever done before, and that's what creates ultimately really successful people, is doing the small things very well, very often.
That's awesome. I know for me too, I talked about this in my last episode, but a lot of times if I can just get myself to the gym, there's people there who will motivate me. They'll say, come on, let's do this workout or that workout. And so that's always fun when you have buddies that are waiting for you at the gym to get you going.
Yeah, that you brought up a great point right there. Accountability. You can have accountability to yourself, but that's one thing. Accountability coming from for somebody else, you know, you're going to be there, you have a partner, or there's a community, a class. You know, that's big for our app, actually, is we have a community base where people talk amongst themselves and they're motivating each other. You know, one person's in India, one person's in Scotland, one person's here. But it's crazy how, you know, everyone goes through similar ups and downs in life. We're never always, you know, on our A game. So I think that, you know, typically somebody has gone through or felt the way that you have felt if you're feeling down. And I think a lot of times it just can take someone else kind of pushing you that day. And ultimately, there's going to come a day where you have to push them as well. So that's a great point, actually. You have that accountability to somebody else.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I've been watching you on social media, and I know my husband loves to see what you're up to on social media, but it looks like you just have this amazing dream life where you just travel around and you do these photo shoots and you're always surrounded by these beautiful women. And I want to know, what has been the biggest or hardest challenge you've had to overcome in just living your dream life?
Oh, you know, there's a lot. There's a lot that goes behind the scenes. So social media is a lot of smoke and mirrors, you know. And I think, you know, I would like to portray a positive nature. And a lot of that, you know, I do have a great life. I need to travel. But I also want to let people know it's not always sunshine and butterflies. And I think that there's been a couple crucial, you know, times in my life. Some hard, we're talking about like things that I've had to get over, you know, the past, or like my daily struggles.
Just whatever's challenged you, whatever you've kind of had to overcome.
Okay. Yeah, I think the biggest things for me were, you know, I do have kind of this tendency to focus really on goals. A lot of times that are, I think, you know, that I get super hyper-focused on things and I lack balance. So I think sometimes balance is probably the thing that I struggle with the most. I want to do one thing and do it extremely well. Like right now, I'm looking for a lot to build on. And what ends up happening, and I've done this with, like, for example, bodybuilding shows. I would do a bodybuilding show, and I would get so hyper-focused on it that some other areas in my life would suffer. And in college, I was just hyper-focused on, you know, really football and school, but mostly football. And, you know, that was really who I was. And, you know, when I didn't make the NFL, that was a super big failure to me in my life. That was like my whole life. I was this football player and was on a college scholarship playing. And we weren't very good, and it was a great learning experience. But ultimately, I wanted to play in the NFL, and that was a huge, I guess, kind of setback in my life. I didn't know after that what I was going to do. You know, I had to kind of reevaluate my life and had to have like a paradigm shift. You know, at the same time, I was married and went through a divorce that forced me to look at my own life. You know, it wasn't my decision at the time to get divorced, but it was something that, you know, I definitely, you know, so I guess those are kind of setbacks. And they're personality traits. strength of mind that, you know, getting hyper-focused on things and not really having that balance, for balance in all things that I do. And that's, again, where I think church comes in or family comes in, because if I'm in my own, you know, my social media, posting on Instagram, looking on Instagram, because everyone has this perfect life, because they only show you the highlight. It's a highlight reel of everyone's life.
Yeah.
Traveling, you know, there's people even that I look at, I'm like, I just wish I had their life, and then I catch myself saying, if I'm not grateful for what I have, I'm never going to be grateful, because, you know, you're only going to be as happy as you are in this moment, and that goes for anything in life. So I think that's the biggest thing I struggle with, is just finding that balance of really setting healthy boundaries in my life and not getting too hyper-focused and creating good habits.
Yeah, I think those types of things are what make you so kind of relatable to everyone is, you know, you mentioned your failures, and that's a question I was going to ask you was about a failure. I had an epic failure of technology this week, and you've been so gracious to help me out with that. But yeah, you mentioned failing, and tell me a little bit more about what you learned from those failures that you experienced, and kind of how you moved past it once you realized you didn't make the NFL and your marriage had failed. Like, how did you move past it and realize that you still had, there was still a lot of life left to live?
Yeah. And that was a time, you know, it seems like early 20s are in everyone's life. You know, you go to school, you kind of have your life, you think, planned out, and life rarely goes as planned. You know, there's one thing that I can tell people is that I never in a million years thought I'd be doing what I am doing now. You know, I thought I'd probably have kids, be working as a chiropractor. But I think that there's a purpose that we all have. And I just really followed what I was passionate about. And everyone always told me, you know, like when I first started in the fitness industry, there's no real money to be made in the fitness industry. This is before Instagram. This is before a lot of, this is before Men's Physique, the division I competed in, and ended up doing, you know, pretty well and getting a sponsorship with the company and then being able to travel the world and then doing YouTube. So I just feel like if there's a will, there's a way. There's people out there that are great personal trainers and have made this very successful career. So I think, you know, we all have passion in life. And you know what we're passionate about. Those are very, a lot of times, very, very in tune with the gifts that we possess, that we are given. And I think that we naturally have a passion for those things because they're God-given gifts. Now, I think that, you know, usually in life, when you get knocked down, I think that, you know, you do one of two things. You kind of sit and wallow and kind of are a little bit depressed. And I think that's perfectly normal. Anytime that you, what you think should happen and what is actually happening is at odds with each other, there's going to be some depression, some stress, some like, why me, why is this happening? And I went through that. The hardest time of my life was, you know, was when I moved back to Idaho after playing college football, and the dream of the NFL was gone, and I was working at Texas Roadhouse because I hadn't finished my college degree. I was something like 11 credits short, and then, you know, went through this divorce that I was kind of blindsided by, and if anything, it left me almost with a clean slate, like, okay, I failed. I have failed in these two areas. You know, I thought I was going to be married. You know, that failed. I thought I was going to be in the NFL. You know, for better or worse, you know, I failed at that. Now what? And there's something about hitting kind of rock bottom where you have no expectation of what should and shouldn't be. And you are just, it's very liberating because you can truly do, that was a time in my life I could truly do whatever I wanted. I moved back in with my parents. I was working at Texas Roadhouse. I stayed busy by picking up a second job at this nutrition supplement store. And I decided, you know what? I can't really control anything else in my life right now other than, you know, going back to school, and then I want to do this bodybuilding show. Because it was something I couldn't control the situation, you know, with my marriage. I couldn't control that I wasn't in the NFL. But I could control how I ate, how much I worked out, going back to school. And I did all of those things. And it was this time of my life that I really focused on, you know, what the things that I kind of neglected. And that was me and setting goals and, you know, looking forced to look at that person in the mirror. And I see my younger brother going through that right now, and it's one of those things, you want to help people, but also those, if you help people too much, they don't go through that. If I didn't go through those hard times, I wouldn't be where I'm at. So when people, you know, don't do things because they're afraid to fail, it just makes me so sad, because failure is really where we learn the most about ourselves. And I know that sounds cliche, but failure is truly where we become better, where we become, you know, eventually are the best versions of ourselves. So I think, you know, without those failures in life, I'd never have success.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I think that failure is an opportunity for us to realize our own strength. I love that you went through that and made the most of it.
Yes, 100%.
So tell me, because you're so popular and you're such a public figure now, and I'm sure people have all kinds of different opinions of you. So my question is, how do you overcome negativity and criticism of your work and keep producing great content? Because I'm sure there's the haters out there who just are jealous and say what they will.
I definitely developed thicker skin being on YouTube. It seems like, you know, YouTube, you know, Instagram, people, if they don't personally know you, they feel like, you know, they act like you're not a real person. And, well, I think I've been guilty of that too, where, you know, you judge a celebrity if you hear they're in and out of rehab or whatever. But, you know, I know that the comments sometimes I read, I'm like, that's the worst thing anyone said. But then I started thinking about it. And, you know, this is something I kind of had to do early on, because I was really like, if anyone didn't like me or left a negative comment, I was like, what am I doing wrong? I wanted everyone to like me. But that's never possible, obviously. And we assume, you know, if there's 100 or 99 good comments and one bad comment, we focus on that one bad comment more than we focus on the 99. Right. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be someone who focuses on the negative, because you're always going to have, you know, an adversary. You're always going to have somebody that is trying to pull you down. And I think the first thing you have to remember is, you know, those people that are making those comments, like, how bad must their life suck if they're, you know, on a keyboard or on a phone somewhere typing hate to a complete stranger? Like,
yeah.
It makes me feel bad for those people. So they're typically the people that, you know, worry about anyways, because, you know, they don't matter. If they don't love you and care about you, if it's not, you know, your mom or your dad or your family, your close friends, well, it's not people that have your best interest at heart. You can't put any kind of weight into those comments, because, again, you know, you're opening yourself up for all sorts of, you know, then you're living, you know, the decisions you make and the happiness that you carry is really controlled by complete strangers. And who wants to live like that? So,
yeah.
You know, I try to kind of think about it this way. You know, if it's not someone who's I would go to for advice or get their opinion on something, then I don't put any weight into what it is, you know, they say. If it's somebody who I value their opinion on it, you know, my aunt, you know, she kind of started out, she kind of, you know, called me out, gave me a text message, because, you know, I think I was in my only, you know, underwear shoot. I was in my Calvin Klein, black and white, trying to be this Calvin Klein, you know, early on in my fitness career. And everyone, I think, does it. You know, and she kind of just was like, you know, is this what you want to portray? And, you know, I at the time, I was like, oh, that was rude. But then, I started thinking about it. And I've never done a shoot like that since. And it's just, again, it's not what I want to portray. And, you know, I'm just so lucky and blessed to have family members and close people that, you know, will keep me in my lane, will keep me, you know, focused on the things that I should be focused on.
Yeah. So what do you want to say to anyone out there who sees your picture and thinks this guy is just muscles and a pretty face and doesn't really have any significant contribution at all? Like, what would you say to those people?
I probably wouldn't say anything. I would smile and just go about my business. Now, if you're my family or my friends or, you know, someone that I put their value in, and, you know, Thomas, will still get to me every now and then, I would say, man, to that person, I'd say, oh, you really don't know me. But I'd also say, you know, like, why do you feel like that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in, you know, we need to serve. I think our greatest happiness comes in serving other people. And if it's someone who, you know, has been following me for forever and they're saying, oh, you've changed, this or that, I'll look into it. But, you know, I want people. I was telling this to him. I was in LA. I lived in LA last year, and I was on this casting call for like a reality TV show, like almost like a extreme weight loss, or what is that? What is the one where
Biggest Loser?
Biggest Loser. I think they needed another trainer, and you know, someone kind of came across that question, like, you know, how do you let people know that there's a deeper message behind it all? And I always like to say, you know, the outside is, you know, Instagram, if I post, like, you know, a selfie, or there's always a point to it. And it's because we as people, and the day we live in social media and everything, it's very superficial. So there's pieces of content I put out there that sometimes I think are borderline, you know, he's into his body, he's into his physique. And those are, I call them, that's the applesauce. But just like, you know, you have, when you feed a baby, you feed them applesauce. And then sometimes, you know, you put carrots and peas. And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't have any kiddos, but and you do. But like, you feed them some of the better tasting stuff, you know, to get the vegetables in as well. Mm-hmm. And so I always say, you know, like that's kind of like, you know, if I'm posting, you know, I'll sometimes post those more outwardly expressive photos that usually draw back to people to kind of to try to make a point and talk about, you know, health and how the exterior is just a byproduct of living healthy. And there's a lot of people in the fitness industry that look healthy on the outside and aren't on the inside. And, you know, I think that I always want to have both, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, that's great. So does the great Steve Cook have any insecurities? And if so, how do you keep them in check so you can go out and be amazing every day?
Oh, yeah. I have so many insecurities. You know, I have said this before. I think the people that, you know, you think are the you know, the most perfect or the prettiest models out there, they have the most insecurities because they're always being told how pretty they are, or, oh, you know, you look phenomenal. How do I look like you? Well, what ends up happening is that we then put too much of our self-worth just upon how we look. And there's always going to be someone out there who's prettier, who's stronger, who's, you know, richer, who has, you know, there's always somebody out there who's better. And as we get older, we all end up as prunes, you know, shriveled up old people. So if you put too much of that, you know, those physical insecurities, if you are, you know, known as this person, you're constantly looking for flaws and you're constantly looking for things to stress or change, because again, you're being reinforced by people telling you that now it's something you have to live up to. And if you know, I'm always looking at my hairline, am I going bald? So again, it comes back to balance and realizing that's not why we're here on earth. That's not there's a bigger purpose to that. And you know, if my exterior can help people out, to bring people or to make people feel a certain way, if I can help people feel better about themselves, get them healthier, both mentally, physically, spiritually, and, you know, along the way, again, looks are part of that equation. You want to feel, you want to look good. You know, I'm not saying like that, I don't ever want that to be what I'm about solely, but, you know, I think that we all have, again, God-given gifts, and if it can be made if it can help serve people or, you know, create a positive atmosphere for people, then I'm going to use any gifts I have to do that.
That's awesome. So what have you learned, and what are your thoughts on body image and confidence? What would you tell kiddos growing up about body image?
Yeah, see, and this is tough, because we're all going to go through, every kid out there is going to go through an awkward stage. I remember in seventh grade, I had awful acne. You know, I was one of those kids that just seemed like I, seventh, eighth grade, I just broke out, and I think I had acne until I was, you know, sophomore, junior in high school, bad acne on my back. And I just remember being so self-conscious. And my dad, you know, this is the kind of love we showed each other in our family. My dad came to, I think it was an eighth grade basketball game, and I had a big zit on my nose. He was calling me Rudolph. My dad, me Rudolph, as I'm running up and down, and I was just mortified. I was so mad at him. But again, you know, character builder, call it what you want. I probably wouldn't advise any parents to go to that level. But, you know, I think body image, it's more something that as parents, you want to let people, your kids know, or, you know, your loved ones know that they're loved regardless, and that they have qualities about them that are other than their looks that they are valued for. And body image, you know, I think that, again, we come, you know, not everyone's the same physically. Not everyone is going to be, you know, the same build or makeup, you know, their genetic makeup. So I think we should embrace that. You know, we are who we are for a reason. And if you believe in that higher power, there's, you know, you believe that, you know, you aren't created as a mistake. You are created to be, you know, the best person. And that might not mean everyone's supposed to be a Victoria's Secret model or whoever it is that you look up to as body goals, but there's typically somebody out there that, you know, might have a similar body type to you that is living their best life and using, you know, their body to, you know, whatever, run marathons or just be this very active mommy or to, you know, just whatever it is. We all have a body. And I think we should take care of that body. You know, Nike, I think, had a slogan that if you have a body, then you're an athlete. And I think, you know, we should definitely respect those bodies and just try to take care of them as well as we can.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I don't think there's one mold that is a good performer. Like I told you last time, my husband and I were in Europe and we got to go to the Olympic Museum in Lausanne, Switzerland. And my very favorite probably display that I've ever seen in my whole life was the silhouette of all of these Olympic athletes lined up on the wall.
Yeah.
And some of them were short and some of them were tall and they were skinny and they were stout and they were all different, but they were all the top performers in their events and they were all different. And so I think you can have, there's so many different shapes and sizes of bodies that can be amazing performers. It's not just one kind of mold.
Oh, completely. I love that. Yeah, from your gymnast to your female shot putter.
Absolutely.
Very different. And then even in the Winter Olympics, you have, you know, just every body type under the sun, probably on the planet, that has competed in some event. And again, those are probably, they're naturally, they have some God-given ability that makes them good at their sport, which includes their physique. You know, if you look at it, most gymnasts in the Olympics are short for a reason. You know, that's something that, you know, some girls who are short might want to be taller. You know, or tall girls, you know, that sometimes maybe feel awkward growing up. You know, like I know some of these sand volleyball players were like 6'2" last Summer Olympics. So I think, again, there's avenues for everyone out there that, you know, can really excel in something with their physique.
Yeah, I love that. So what advice would you give to someone who wanted to get out of their comfort zone and maybe train for like a fitness competition or something like that? What would you tell them to do?
Because of my own past with this, because of my own going through it and dealing with some of the stuff I've dealt with, the balance word keeps coming back to me, to strive for balance. Because it's easy to jump into this show and you're focusing on yourself. How many calories do I have to eat? How much protein? I have to get my 8 hours of sleep. I have to go to the gym. And then I have to come back for cardio. I have to practice my posing. And it's a very superficial sport. It's very like, okay, you're up there and the judges base, you know, they look at you for a second and they judge you based upon how well you look. So I think it's important for people to keep a healthy outlook on, it's a competition, but it really needs to be with yourself. It's about how far you can push yourself. And, you know, like running a marathon necessarily isn't healthy, but people do it because people enjoy it. They give them a euphoric high. You know, prepping for a show, I'm so detailed and I have to be on top of my game with my nutrition and my water. And for the most part of it, I feel good while prepping. Now, the last maybe week or so, when your calories are low and your carbohydrates are low, you can get very crabby, you can get hungry, because really you're just starving yourself to a certain point because you're at a caloric deficit. So I would just tell people, keep things in balance and keep a healthy outlook on it. Realize that, you know, your life probably isn't going to change. Like, you're not going to get noticed and become the next Arnold Schwarzenegger, the next, you know, whoever. You might, but have a healthy outlook that, you know, it has to be a passion. If it's truly a passion of yours, you have to go after that. But just know that, you know, like, you can't live like that either. You can't live that detailed with all of your food all the time, all of your water. You're not going to be able to live at the low body fat that you're at when you step on stage. So, you know, I would talk to people that have competed before and talk to them maybe about what to expect. And then just go into it and try to have as much fun as possible.
Yeah, and keep that balance, yeah. So what's your best advice for someone who's just starting out with exercise or fitness, who is, you know, just starting to get into shape? What would you tell them?
This is a great question, too, because every January, you know, so many people have New Year's resolutions, and I hear these New Year's resolutions that include, you know, I'm gonna eat healthy, and then what happens is slowly but surely people realize it's not sustainable to eat, you know, chicken and rice every meal. Again, that takes a lot of self-control and a lot of time to create healthy eating habits. And part of healthy eating habits are really not beating yourself up if you need a sweet or a treat. And I guess the biggest thing I would tell people, and something that I have to remind myself all the time, is that this is a journey. Like, whatever, if you're just starting out in fitness, like, it's a fun, exciting time, and you can get consumed by it and want to know everything by it. But realize that, like, you set a goal, and you should. You should always set goals, you know. So let's say you're starting out to fitness. Your goal is to go to the gym X amount of times, to reduce your body fat. Enjoy the process of doing that. Enjoying the struggles. Enjoying, you know, the workouts themselves. Enjoy learning how to count, you know, macronutrients on your MyFitnessPal. Because it's journey and not the destination. Because what happens when you hit your goal? It's human nature to then set another goal. And then what is happening? We're always just kind of dangling that carrot in front of us saying, I'll be happy when. I'll be happy when I reach this goal. I'll be happy when I have, you know, a million followers. Or I'll be happy when I have, and this goes for life too, I'll be happy when I make $100,000 a year. And then you make $100,000 a year and you're still not happy. So it's like, oh, I'll be happy when I make $250,000 a year. But if you're not happy right now, you're never going to be happy. Because there's somebody who wants your current life. There's somebody who thinks they would be happy with your current life. So I think the best way to be happy is to enjoy the daily process. To just be happy, be grateful. Find things to be grateful for. And then you're going to reach your goals faster. And then you're going to always live in this state of happiness. Maybe not content, but happiness where you're then a great person to be around. You're inspiring others because other people, happiness is infectious and it rubs off on people. So if you're happy and you're living this life that you're, you know, you're grateful for, it's going to rub off. So the people starting out say, you know, don't feel like you have to have it all figured out, or don't beat yourself up because you go to the gym and there's people there that are fitter, stronger, leaner, you know, with less body fat. Those people all started out where you're currently started out. So just enjoy that process.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Wherever you start is a great place to start, for sure. And to just be grateful that you have a body that works, that, hey, I have legs yes. that carry me where I need to go, and arms that can reach things, and fingers that work. And yeah, that's all great points. Thank you.
And that, again, getting back to the service thing, if you want to be grateful, I think getting back to that, you know, happiness. You're happy when you're grateful. You want to be grateful? Go serve someplace. Go serve somebody who doesn't have as much as you or who's in need of something, and you'll go home at night and lay your head on the pillow a lot more grateful for what you have. And that's why I think serving people is really the key to happiness in life.
I love that. I love that. So what advice would you give to those of us who are discouraged because we're working so hard and we're not seeing the kind of results that we're hoping for as far as weight or physique? Or, I mean, I feel like I plateau a lot and I'm like, why can't I just lose this last 5 pounds? Or what would you tell me there?
Yeah, we all go through those plateaus, you know, and I think I always tell people when you're starting to finish journey or really anything in life, journaling really helps. Sometimes we don't think we're making progress, but we really are. And it's inevitable. Progress slows down. So when you're a beginner in the gym, progress comes fast. PRs, you know, personal best, they all come fast because you have so much potential, and now you're starting to grow and to do all those things that, you know, your body is primed for. Inevitably, it's going to slow down. So I think a lot of the times we have to change up. We have to change the stimulus. We have to change up, you know, how we're looking at things. And some of the times that, you know, I felt like I just, you know, I'm not seeing the progress, or I'm not having fun in the gym. I'll just completely either take some rest time or I'll switch up stuff completely. Like, you know, I think it's important to, you know, to be pushing ourselves in our lives, but also, you know, to realize sometimes backing off things, you can actually overtrain, which is going to set yourself, it's not easy to do, but if you undereat and overtrain, you're going to get weaker, you're going to actually hold on to body fat more. So I think it's training smarter, not harder all the time. That sometimes means taking breaks, but it also might mean changing up the stimulus, maybe trying something, you know, maybe doing more yoga, maybe trying CrossFit if you're a bodybuilder, or doing some bodybuilding if you're a CrossFitter, because there's something to, you know, there's a reason people cross-train. Like, there's a reason, like, people who are sprinters also do weights. So I think you might have to look at another modality to do while you're still continuing on to your goal, you know. And I think that ultimately, if you're not having fun at what you're doing, you need to reevaluate it. But you also need to look at your life and look at the, you know, sometimes stress from a job or from family. And you need to give yourself some slack in those circumstances. Like, you're not to be performing your best. If you're, you know, overworked, you have a brand new baby and you're, you know, staying up at night not getting enough sleep. So I think that you need to be reasonable with yourself and not beat yourself up.
Yeah, that's awesome. So here's the question I think everyone's been waiting for. What are your best tips and tricks for getting swimsuit ready by this summer?
Oh, yeah, as it's getting warmer out, everyone wants things back. My best tip and trick would be that Christmas time next year, don't allow yourself to stop working out and to allow yourself to eat whatever you want. I'm a big fan of, you know, never again, I'm a big fan of living a balanced life, and part of that means, you know, doing the things when you're wearing a sweatshirt and it's cold outside and you're not thinking of that spring break trip, doing the things that you should be doing so you can then be prepared for when they are. But, you know, for people that are looking to tighten up, there's things we work with people, carb cycling, we do a lot of high intensity, we bump up the sprints. I would always tell people to continue to lift. If you're not lifting and you want to reduce body fat, add some resistance training. Even if it's 3 days a week, you got to be working out, because let's say I'm 200 pounds and I'm 20% body fat, and there's someone else who's 200 pounds and 10% body fat. Well, if everything else is equal, meaning our daily activity levels, our age, we don't have any thyroid issues or anything like that, we're pretty much the same person, just one's 200 pounds, 10% body fat, one's 200 pounds, 20% body fat. That person who's lower body fat percentage, meaning they have more muscle, needs more calories to live their life. So you can actually eat more if you have more muscle. I mean, it's easier to burn fat if you have more muscle. So I always tell people, make sure you're doing some resistance training. And then on top of that, you know, work in some HIIT cardio. And then, you know, besides that, the carb cycling, learn how to read, learn how to flexible diet. I'm a big believer that we should all be able to read food labels. In schools, I think we should be teaching kids how to read food labels properly and what those ingredients are. If you can't pronounce stuff, chances are we shouldn't be putting it in our body. So reading food labels and then being able to calculate, what is a macronutrient? What is a protein, carbon, fat? How many calories is in each one? What is a calorie? You know, like, and then look at like healthy portion controls, you know, healthy portion sizes. And then, you know, from that, that's knowledge. Knowledge, like they say, knowledge is power. So if you're able to do that, then you're able to create, you know, meal plans for yourself and, you know, start carb cycling. And really, you set a plan. Like, I know when I compete, if it's a 12-week prep, I know how, like, you know, let's say I'm 12% body fat when I start, and I'm 6%, I need to be 6% on stage, then it's just working backwards from there, and I know I follow a set plan, and I need to drop my calories accordingly. You know, let's say, you know, me personally, if I need to eat 3,500 calories a day to maintain my body weight, if I want to lose 1 pound a week, I need to be at a deficit of 3,500 calories total for the week, which is equal to 500 calories a day. And I know I'm talking about an awful lot of math here, but it comes back to that knowledge. Learning about what the food we're putting in, well, you know, like that's important stuff that goes a long way later on in life. And I just wish we taught kids more about that.
You make an excellent point, Steve. I think I found a way for you to serve. Like, we really should be teaching the kids in the schools how to read food labels and how to eat more real food that's not unpronounceable. I mean, you could go around to schools and really influence a lot of kids with the obesity epidemic that we're facing right now, and kids that are sedentary and just eating Cheetos all day. Like, really, you could really inspire some kids to pay attention to what they're putting in their bodies. I found a way for you to serve.
And I'm passionate about it. It's one of those things, like we talked about, like where you're passionate, that's where your heart's at. You should go for that. So, you know, like right now, yeah, I travel a bunch, and we have our app that we get to coach people up on, and we're going to start doing podcasts of our own.
That's great.
The culture stuff where we have our gym, and I know my gym partner, my business partner on it, you know, he's just as passionate about it. And I guess, you know, I get fired up about the food stuff, because these are things that I didn't learn growing up. We don't learn really what a macronutrient is.
You're right.
But, yeah.
So this question is for the guys that are out there listening. They want to know how many hours you spend at the gym each day or week, and how many grams of protein you eat every day.
I get this question quite a bit. You know, mostly by, you know, like 90% of the times I get this question is mostly by women. It's funny. I think so. It's just like, I don't want to go to the gym that much. I'm like, you must spend an awful lot of time in there. And really, it's more about consistency rather than like quantity. I don't spend a ton of time in the gym anymore. Depends on what my goals are. If my goals are to get stronger or to get bigger, you know, it means I'm not going to be doing as much cardio and it's less time. But I would say on the average, I spend 60 to 90 minutes into the gym about 5 days a week. Now, if I was just trying to put on size, like, you know, growing up, four days a week would be enough for me. I like going to the gym, you know. I own a gym, so I'm there anyway. So I count like my stretching and my cardio into that as well. But really, you know, beginners are going to see amazing results even with like 3 days a week in the gym. You know, growing up, where I was getting really strong and creating a great physique, I was in the gym 4 days a week. It really just comes down to to what you're putting in your body, what you're fueling your body with, and making sure you get enough protein, and making sure you know you're not overdoing the carbohydrates, the sugary carbohydrates, unless your goal is to put on a lot of size. And I know some people that are ectomorphs, which means they just have a hard time putting on any kind of weight. And with someone like that, I would say, hey, now pretty much, you know, eat what you want within moderation, obviously. Like, those people can't eat enough. Like, their appetite, like, they'll be way too full before they ever, you know, seem like they're gaining weight. But I eat right now about 220 grams of protein, and that's, you know, through shakes and everything else. And if I hit, usually it's between 180 and 220 grams, but I'm really maintaining right now. I'm not trying to get any bigger.
That's awesome, Steve. Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you doing this redo with me. I think this interview was even better than the last one. But tell us what you're working on right now and where my listeners can find you, and tell us a little bit about your app and what it does. And I will definitely link to all of that in the show notes.
Yeah, oh, I appreciate that. Man, yeah, it's fun to get on here and talk about all this stuff, Sam. I love it. Yeah, so I'm releasing my own clothing line in collaboration with Gymshark. It's a company I've been working for. We're going to Australia this Saturday. I'm off to Australia, so we're going to go release that, which is fun. We just opened up the gym in January in St. George, Utah, called Fitness Culture, and the app is the exact same name. So we have programs for men out there, programs for women, programs that range from, like, powerlifting to just toning up to, you know, getting stronger, to getting bigger, to doing more like CrossFit type stuff with our athlete program. So, you know, I've surrounded myself, you know, we have some amazing coaches. We have a University of Houston strength coach that works with us. You know, my business partner, Jacob Hutton, played football at Utah State, and I think he just has to go defend his thesis, and then he has his master's degree in exercise science. But we really want to get, like, you know, there's so much, and I hate saying this, there's so much bad information on social media that, you know, people that, you know, just because they look good, they feel like they should just tell people what to do. And really, you know, I think I have the platform where, you know, and the people around me, that we want to, you know, really cultivate a strong community that, you know, is backed by science and things like that with what we're doing. So, yeah, Fitness Culture is that app. We do nutrition, we do the training, we do mobility. Mobility is a huge part of it. And then, yeah, on my YouTube, I'm just Steve Cook. We produce right now. We're doing a video every single day. And then just on Instagram and Facebook, Steve Cook as well.
Awesome. Well, I will link to all that in the show notes. And good luck in Australia. That sounds really fun. And let's keep in touch. Thanks so much for being on the show, Steve.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I look forward to seeing you guys sometime soon.
Okay, that was awesome. I am so thankful to Steve, who is a obviously really busy guy, for taking the time to sit down with me and just chat. Like he said, it felt like talking with an old friend. I loved his thoughts on intrinsic versus external motivation, as well as his thoughts on balance and insecurities and how to make your own health and physical fitness a priority, and educating yourself on the foods that you eat and the different exercises that are important. I am so, like I said, proud of Steve for following his passion, for being able to get through those really difficult times in his life, and what he made out of some really difficult circumstances. He is so successful now, and it's so fun to watch him continue to live out his purpose and find happiness doing the things that he's doing. I hope that you will tune into this season of The Biggest Loser with me and cheer Steve on as he helps individuals reach their fitness goals. One of the biggest reasons I wanted to republish this episode, besides the fact that I'm just super proud of Steve and wish him all the happiness and success that life has for him, but I also thought it would be a great introduction for the Epic Health Summit, which actually starts next week. Can you believe that? So if you haven't yet, make sure you go to www.onthebrightersideofhealth.com/register to save your spot for this incredible summit, where I've interviewed 32 health experts in the areas of physical, mental, and emotional health. They are going to teach us ways to feel better, look better, and think better, and really get into tip-top health in 2020. I felt really strongly about putting this together, and I have been blown away by the quality of content that these incredible experts have provided. Now, each of them has made a 30-day step-by-step plan for improving your health according to their specialties, and those plans are available, all of the plans, for just $7. So consider doing that. Those are available for immediate download. Once you sign up for them, you can go log into the membership site and download those so you can be looking at those. And then all of the interviews are based on those plans. So you will be ready for the interviews when they come out February 4th through the 6th. I would also encourage you to think about purchasing one of the all access passes so that you can have lifetime access to all of these, because they will be applicable for years to come, as well as the bonuses that are really great in addition to the interviews. I also want to remind you about the I Am Mom Summit coming up directly after. So the Health Summit is February 4th through the 6th, and the I Am Mom Summit is February 7th and 8th. I will be presenting on how to change your marriage without changing your spouse. And then coming around Valentine's Day is my On the Brighter Side of Marriage course, which I'm really excited to put out into the world. So if you're interested in any of those things, reach out to me. I always love hearing from you, and get excited for Monday, where I will be interviewing Jessica Procini, who talks about emotional eating. That is an incredible podcast interview, as well as she is one of our presenters in the Health Summit. So I am excited for you to get to know her better. Subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And until next week, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.